we think that a photograph reflects reality. And Florence Arie plays on that. So she's showing us a reality that doesn't exist. It's virtual. Paola Rosina, I work at the Archive Florence Arie.
We are talking about Florence Arie circa 100 years after her beginning in photography. But our language seems like we are speaking of a very contemporary artist,
Roberto La Carbonara, Italian art curator.
Oui, c'est la liberté, finalement.
Yes, it's ultimately the freedom of an artist who has never remained fixed in her artistic pursuit. There are significant changes.
Il y a des changements total. Giovanni Battista Martini.
I'm the chief curator of the Florence Henri archive and also the owner of the Galleria Martini Ronchetti that worked with Florence Henri for a long time.
My name is Anja Guttenberger and this is my podcast, Bauhaus Faces.
Welcome back to a new episode of Bauhaus Faces. Thanks for tuning in again. In this first episode of 2026, I would like to introduce to you the magnificent painter and photographer Florence Henri, who stayed at the Bauhaus for 6 months as a visiting student, but mostly because she wanted to live in the Bauhaus building and meet friends that she had gotten to know earlier. Inspired by the photographer Lucia Moli, Florence Henri started experimenting with photography, a totally new medium for her at the time. When she returned to her studio in Paris, she wrote in a letter to the Bauhausler Lou Schepa that she was so bored of painting and that she had started taking photos instead more seriously. If she became good enough, she wrote, she wanted to give up painting altogether and start photographing professionally. And that's exactly what she did. Her first photographic attempts centered around the composition of the image by using mirrors and props that opened new spaces beyond reality. Henri's photographs became more and more prolific over time. She worked as advertisement and portrait photographer, always staying true to her artistic self. And she trained several women who later became famous photographers themselves with their very own style. And those students of hers were no others than Lore Krüger, Dora Maar, Dorothy Weil, Lisette Goudel, Giselle Freund and Ilse Bing. My interview partners for this brand new episode are the gallery owner Giovanni Battista Martini of the Galleria Martini e Ronchetti in Genoa, his wife, the art historian and Florence Henri savvy Paola Rosina, and the Italian curator Roberto La Carbonara. We met in Switzerland and had to find a way to communicate well. As I do not speak any Italian, Paola and Roberto translated my questions for Giovanni into Italian, and he answered in French, which I fortunately do understand well enough. This is why I dubbed his answers in English. I've planned a special treat for you all. In mid-February, I will post a bonus episode featuring my three interview partners in which they describe their favorite photo of Florence Henri in detail. So stay tuned for that very special episode too. And now, listen up all French speakers because I will also publish the original interview in French and English in mid-February as another bonus episode. It is much longer than the edited English version and you will for the first time see the difference of original and cut version and the way I rearrange my interviews to give it structure and a red thread so you can follow us. You see, there's so much to come. If you want to be reminded of all those episodes, you can subscribe to my podcast newsletter, which immediately pops up when you enter the podcast website bauhausfaces.com. And just to be safe, you should also subscribe to Bauhaus Faces on any major podcast platform like Apple Podcasts, Spotify or YouTube. You can even choose the option to get a push message as soon as a new podcast episode is published and to download it immediately. Whenever you are in the mood for Bauhaus Faces, you can then listen to it, no matter how good or bad the internet connection is. Just saying, I'm speaking from experience. Let's get now finally started with a brand new episode of Bauhaus Faces and shine a light on Florence Henri.
On l'a connue en 1973.
We met her in 1973. We had come across her earlier when we found a newspaper from that period and saw these incredible abstract photos by Florence Henri on one of the pages. So we started looking for the artist because at the time we had already done two exhibitions on Man Ray. And when we saw Florence Henri's photos, we thought that this was the other side of the avant-garde photographic expression, whereas Man Ray was all about Dada and surrealism. And when we saw these photos, we said, that's it. That's the whole part that concerns abstract art, constructivist art, if you like. And from there began our search to find the living artist. It was a rather long process, though. Now, it may not be possible to tell the whole story, but thanks to the intuition of Alberto Sartoris, the Italian rationalist architect who lived in Switzerland and had been friends with Florence Henri since the 1920s, he gave us the address of another photographer who lived in Paris, Willy Maywald. One day, we set off for Paris and arrived at Willy Maywald's house and asked if he had any photos of Florence Henri. He said, no, unfortunately, I don't have any photos, but I'm on my way to her house because tomorrow is her birthday. It's Florence's 80th birthday. So we went with him to Belleval, where Florence lived. And there we met Florence on her 80th birthday. It was 28th of June 1973. That was it. Well, that was the beginning.
Bon, ça c'était le commencement. Et puis on a commencé à travailler avec elle.
And then we started working with her. The very next year, it was 1974, we held our first exhibition in Genoa. And then we had an exhibition in New York because at the time we had also opened a gallery in New York. Even though I don't speak English, that's how it was back then. It was possible. And then we started working with her and her archive. We thought about making donations to public museums because at the time she was not well known at all. So we decided to make a donation to Centre Pompidou, which had just opened in 1976, and to the University of Parma, where there was a center that was starting to organize archives of artists, especially artists who worked with different media, design, photography, painting, etc. And with that, we had 175 photos printed, which were donated with Florence Henri's handwritten signature to the Centre Pompidou and Parma. Then we started working on exhibitions for the general public. And finally, with Florence still alive, there was the exhibition at the Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de Paris, followed by other exhibitions, including the one at the Centre Pompidou from our donation, which came a little after the one at the Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de Paris.
Au Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de Paris. Voilà. Et puis, pendant l'année, on allait souvent.
And then, over the course of the year, we often went to Florence Henri's house to work with her, to organize the archive, especially to compile her biography, because there was no such thing. There was a fairly important article, but it was a critical reading of her photographic work by Romeo Martinez, who was a major photography critic at the time. But from the point of view of reconstructing her life, there was nothing. Because there were no exhibitions, no work had yet been organized on her directions, on her themes. And with her, little by little, she didn't like to talk about her life very much, but we still managed to reconstruct her biography and her story a little.
Reconstruire un peu sa biographie et son histoire. Voilà.
Also, because she was very, very critical of her own work. So very often when they worked together in Belleval, she would take her works like and throw them.
Ah oui,
ça c'est. And so, luckily, Johnny was there and managed to save a lot of work because she was really very, very critical of her work. And she said, no, this is not good enough.
At that point, we completely stopped showing her the work that we had chosen because we wanted to place them in the right year and so on. She was very hard on herself, that's all. I can say that everything that she gave to us has remained in the archives, and all the paintings we showed you, except for the last works from the 1930s onwards, were ones that I tried to buy on the market and to make her oeuvre as complete as possible. Unfortunately, some of them are missing because we are not a bank.
Parce que on n'est pas une banque. Il y a eu un moment assez douloureux, le moment que Florence...
There was a rather painful moment when Florence fell in her house in Belleval, a small village near the Compiègne forest where she lived. Since the 80s, when she left Paris to move into this house, which belonged to a dear friend of hers, Jean Tafoureau, but which she considered her home, of course. So she was all alone. She fell, she broke her leg, and then she also had problems with diabetes, and they had to amputate her leg. And so we had to find a retirement home where she could live. We had set up a small room with personal assistance devices, and that's where she lived until her death in 1982. And then we did everything we could to have her buried at Père Lachaise, which is the cemetery where artists are buried in Paris. It wasn't easy because she died at the hospital in Compiègne. She was already well known at the time, having had exhibitions at the Centre Pompidou and at the Musée d'Art Moderne in Paris. And so we were allowed to bury her at Père Lachaise in the end. She was cremated, because that's what she had decided during her lifetime. There you have it. These are private matters, but they are important nonetheless. They help us understand Florence Henri as a person and her life.
Pour comprendre aussi le personnage, la vie de Florence, oui.
I'd like to step in regarding your question. You asked Gianni how come there wasn't a biography when they met. So Florence Henri, when she started taking photographs in 1927, she was a now accomplished painter. She had studied at the Académie Moderne with Léger and as enfant, and she stopped at the Bauhaus on the way back from Berlin just to say hi to friends, you know. And that's how she started. But she only photographed until the early 50s. Then she got back to painting. So her career as a photographer is rather short. And after the war, she decided to leave Paris, where she had been living, and she retired in this small village. And because she had absolutely no interest in the market as such, she somehow also retired from the art scene. And that's the reason why we have important exhibitions of Florence Henri in the late 20s, in the 30s. But then we don't have anything until the 70s, when actually Gianni and his gallery began working with her. So that's the reason why we have quite some interesting material. She was part of Film and Photo. She was part of Das Lichtbild. She was featured by Molyneux on 18. So she was an important photographer. But when she left, when she stopped taking pictures, somehow her memory just vanished. So really no one knew who she was anymore. And no one knew her whereabouts. So it was really important to be able to be with her and slowly, you know, trace back her life, which is fascinating on its own because she had a stunning life, but also the role that she played in the art world in the 30s. We know that many photographers learned from her because she actually gave lessons. And so it's not just her work, but herself, the way she taught her students is also very important.
I really love the work Gianni is realizing with Florence Henri, not now, but from 30, 40 years, mainly for the dialogue between the media, between the painting, the drawings, and photography. So this research is very connected with many European themes, many European surveys from Cubism to Neoplasticism, Italian Futurism, and many connections. So Franz Hali is a figure, it's a present, very important for these panoramas of contemporary art and post-war art for many reasons.
I found it quite important to put the rediscovery of Laurence Henri at the beginning of this podcast episode. Not only because I had the actual person who rediscovered her work and then made her famous in front of my microphone, but also to stress that this is what happened to many other photographers, especially female photographers of the avant-garde. They became famous quickly among their contemporaries, and then all of that seems to have been forgotten. And the reason for that is the interruption of art by World War II. With the upheaval of the Nazis, avant-garde art, photography, painting, music, dance, and so on, were repressed. The rapid development of art in Germany and in Europe in general in the 1920s and early 1930s came to an abrupt halt. Avant-garde art was not only shamed, but largely forbidden, and that also had an effect even on those who no longer lived in Germany, like Florence Henri. Because her art had been mainly published in Germany, the knowledge about the grandeur of her early photographs simply got lost over time. It is thanks to art historians, galleries like Giovanni Battista Martini, institutions that started to re-exhibit avant-garde art after World War II, and last but not least, former avant-garde artists themselves, who powerfully promoted their early work after World War II or from other countries. Some of them were successful. Others forgotten. That's just to explain why this episode of Bauhaus Faces is being told from the end. But now we are jumping right into the beginning of Laurence Henri's life. This is Giovanni Battista Martini again.
Elle est née aux États-Unis, à New York, d'un père français et d'une mère allemande.
Florence Henri was born in New York to a French father and a German mother. Her mother died when she was only 3 years old, and then her father also died when she was still young. And so she came to Europe, eventually being raised by her uncles and aunts. But she began studying piano at an early age. She studied on the Isle of Wight, in Rome, at the Accademia di Santa Cecilia, where she lived with her aunt and was exposed to the art of her uncle, Gino Gori, who was associated with the Italian Futurist group. He had frequented the Cabaret del Diavolo in Rome, which was a fairly important avant-garde center in Rome. Then finally, during the First World War, Henri was in Berlin, still pursuing her career as a piano player. At one point, she was even a student of Ferruccio Bosoni, a great Italian musician. He lived in Germany. While she was in Berlin, she was prevented from accessing the financial inheritance her father had left her. So she was forced to play the piano in silent film cinemas, accompanying the films that were being shown. That was how cinema worked at the time. She said that this experience affected her deeply and caused her to become so depressed that she eventually gave up music.
Ça l'a mis dans une dépression telle que elle a quitté la musique finalement. Elle s'est inscrite à une académie, c'était la peinture.
She then enrolled at the academy of a painter she knew, Johann Walter Kurau, which was quite a large academy and studio. And after that she studied with Alexander Archipenko. It was interesting because there are drawings that we might be able to show in a future exhibition. They are very much in the style of Archipenko in terms of the distribution of volumes, the way they are drawn, the construction of the image and so on. And then she met someone quite important, especially in relation to her cultural education, and that was Karl Einstein. He was a critic, an art historian, perhaps the first to begin studying African art, primitive art. He was an anti-fascist, and he later committed suicide in Spain. She even traveled to Italy with him. Florence Henri was painting at the time, still in a figurative style. These are the paintings she did in the south of France and Italy. At that point, we are really at the beginning of the 1920s in that era. Then, at a certain point, she wanted to go to Paris, but she was stateless and she could not enter France without a passport. So she came to Switzerland, married a Mr. Costa, and became a Swiss citizen with a passport. It was a totally white marriage, as they say, because I think she even paid this man to marry her. But in any case, she became a Swiss citizen. And with that, she was now able to enter France. She enrolled at the Académie Moderne in Paris, which was headed by Amédée aux Enfants and Fernand Léger. And there's also a whole series of productions, paintings that reflect her experience at the Académie Moderne. And the same work was shown in exhibitions organized by the Académie Moderne in important institutions and in important places. And that's how her career as a painter began from a truly professional standpoint.
Et comme ça, sa carrière de peintre a commencé d'un point de vue vraiment professionnel. Elle était le semestre, le six mois du 27.
She was at the Bauhaus for one semester, 6 months of 1927. She enrolled to live at the Bauhaus. They had these students' apartments, even though she already had friends there, artists. She was like a visiting student, a hospitant. And if you check the Bauhaus student lists, you will find her among the students enrolled for the semester of 1927. I think she was mainly at the parties at the Bauhaus, because she was already friends with the masters. She had already visited the Bauhaus before, in Weimar. That's where she met Paul Klee. And she had met another photographer there with whom she was very friendly, Max Pfeiffer-Wartenfuhl. She stayed in touch with Bauhaus people after she left, especially with Lucia Moholy, even after the Moholys left the Bauhaus, and she stayed in touch with Albers. At one point, he wrote her a letter. Another artist she knew from the Bauhaus was the painter Hans Hofmann, who had many important connections from an artistic point of view. He was the father of informal art, really. After leaving Germany, he lived in the United States and became very important for the entire American informal school.
Il a été très important pour toute l'école informelle américaine.
It's very interesting. Florence passed from a student to a real colleague in the many exhibitions, because she and Molinaggi, but also Paul Klee, Kandinsky, the other artists, have lots of exhibitions together in the future.
And we have this picture here, 1928, in Paris. That's her house, and that's her home in Paris, and Georg Muche. So yes, I mean, they visited her in Paris.
Let's pause here for a moment and have a closer look at Florence Henri's stay at the Bauhaus in Dessau. Why did she come here and what did she do? Florence Henri had met Margarete Schall at the Painting Academy of Johann Walter Kurer in Berlin. Schall inscribed at the Bauhaus in the summer semester of 1927. Fascinated by Georg Muche, Laszlo Moholy-Nagy and tubular steel furniture of the Bauhaus, Florence Henri came to the Bauhaus in Dessau to visit her lifelong friend, Margarete Schall. She too inscribed as guest student at the Bauhaus to study with Josef Albers and Laszlo Moholy-Nagy in the preliminary course. Probably through Moholy-Nagy, she met Lucia Moholy, and a close friendship developed between the two women. There are some photographs of Florence Henri at the Bauhaus in Dessau preserved in the multiple collections worldwide. In them, we see the artist, among other Bauhauslers, students and masters alike, celebrating her birthday or just socializing in the garden. Lucia Moholy took some portraits of Florence Henri, and they really caught her nature. In one of the portraits, Henri is facing the camera. Her left ear is cut off at the frame of the photograph, whereas her right ear, with the extravagant large earring, is visible in all its splendor. Lucia Moholy came very close to her friend. Almost every pore is visible. At that point, she wore her hair short. The thick fringe covers her forehead. Another portrait captured Henri from the side, exposing the left ear that was invisible in the face portrait. In that ear, she wore a simple ear stud with a big pearl or metal bead, something reflective. It resembles very much a Renaissance portrait. During Florence Henri's time at the Bauhaus, she produced her first cautious experiments with photography, a medium that she had never used before. Let's have a look at some of her early photos that she produced shortly after leaving the Bauhaus. There's a whole series of portraits of Margarete Schall. They all have in common that we only see reflections of her in different mirrors, but never the person in reality, if you like. At the same time, the different mirrors she used compose and dominate the whole image, offering multiple layers and abstract surfaces. It is a method that she learned to use in her paintings at the Académie Moderne d'Art with the purist artists Amédée aux Enfants and Fernand Léger. In her painting with the title Industrial and Urban Landscape from 1924, for example, the differently shaped houses and colors determine the structure of the picture and specify foreground, middle ground, and background. In her photographs, she added the reflective element to that concept, thereby often leaving the observer a little puzzled about what is where. In the deliberate construction of her photographs, Henri also started playing with reality and virtuality, a motif that especially French surrealists used and which would later influence her photography strongly. In her photographic self-portraits that she produced in her art studio in Paris and about which I have written a whole chapter in my PhD thesis, Florence Henri added a psychoanalytical layer to her work. In looking at herself in a mirror and photographing herself while doing so, she creates a body double that is in a place where the real Florence is not. That way, she was able to examine herself in a more objective way. She created different layers of reality and produced a place that is elastic and needed to be manipulated by the artist in order to manufacture visual complexity. Wow, that all sounded really deep. Fact is that Florence Henri is among many other women at the Bauhaus who portrait themselves in photographs. I suspect to experiment with the limits of photography, but also quite often to understand their changing role as women at the Bauhaus and in the society of the Weimar Republic. And they often preferred the photo camera to do so. And that had to do with the technical development of the camera in general in the mid-1920s, whereby photography became more flexible and cheaper too. Whole new careers as the racing photographer or as advertisement photographer had emerged, and many women saw this as an opportunity to earn their own money and live independently. Florence Henri was no exception here. Paola Rosina explained Florence Henri's work as a photographer in more detail.
What I think is really major in her work is that the way she understood that photography was a medium that allowed her to go beyond what her researches as painter had been so far. And we have like a starting point, we have a source. It's a letter that she wrote in February 1928. So she had come back from the Bauhaus at the end of the summer 1927, and she writes a letter to Lou Schepper. And she writes, it's a letter that is actually at the Bauhaus archive. She writes, "I'm tired of painting, but I have a whole load of incredible ideas about photography. So I'm going to start doing it seriously." And to this letter, she attaches three photographs. So a self-portrait, the portrait of Margarete Schaal with the Breuer frames, and that of Charlie, who's a Swedish friend of them. So we have a source, which is also very interesting. And I think that she was deeply conscious of what photography as a medium was offering her. And she played all her life on this perception that we have, we all have. When we see a photograph, we think that a photograph reflects reality. We have this idea in mind. So whatever we see in a photograph, we are bound to think that we're seeing reality. And Florence Henri plays on that. So she's showing us a reality that doesn't exist. It's virtual, either through mirrors or reflections or the way she builds the space. She's tripping us into something. And the reason why I say that she was really conscious of that is that very often she would not explain how she took a photograph. So Gianni often asked, how did you do this? And she said, I'm not telling you. Yeah. And I think this is really what makes her photographic work so interesting and so meaningful for the future. The ability of getting a new media, a new vision, and a new way to explore not only reality, but also your own mind. And that's where the link with surrealism is, I think, not only in the image, but really in the trick and what lays behind these pictures.
And these photos immediately had a huge impact, while Leslie Morlinotch presented them in an article in the newspaper I-10, Internationale Revue, with a very positive review, saying that we had never seen photos with these issues of vision, reflection, and so on. And from there, her work really began to resonate. It was included in major exhibitions such as Film and Foto or Das Lichtbild. And then the Folkwang Museum in Essen held a solo exhibition of her work curated by Kurt Wilhelm Kästner, who was a curator at the Essen Museum at the time, and Florence Henri photographed him. There is a magnificent portrait of Kästner by her. In these photos, even the portrait becomes a field of abstraction. On the other hand, there was a whole series of work she did, either on portraits or still lives, using elements she placed between the lens and the subject to be photographed, to create a sense of depth and a different feeling of space in the work. This is a portrait taken as soon as she had left the Bauhaus, where she had bought Marcel Breuer's furniture, two small tubular steel armchairs and a table. And here they are still to be arranged. And then there's another self-portrait in which she sat in a Breuer chair. There are objects there, such as the tea set by Wilhelm Wagenfeld that she had also bought at the Bauhaus, which she sometimes used in still life compositions. And there you have it, still lives using the same photographic technique. I think it was always this desire to find a representation of a space that is not a real space, but a purely mental, conceptual space of reflection. And of course, there's a whole meaning to be found in reflecting on oneself, because when she did this other portrait with the two bowls, it also raised a whole set of issues that go far beyond a simple photograph. It was a way of looking at oneself, of reflecting on oneself, on one's being. But above all, I think that ultimately it was a question of finding a representation of a space that is not real, but which seems real because it is virtual, because it was mirrored. That may have been the meaning of this photograph, the use of the mirror. If you like, it was a bit the same problem when you place elements between the object and the lens, because here too she creates a completely unreal space. Even though the still life, the object, is real, the vision was not.
Parce que là aussi, elle réalise un espace totalement irréel. Elle avait pas de problème à utiliser les éléments de la quotidianité.
She had no problem in using everyday objects to create her compositions, because hers were truly abstract, constructivist compositions. And at the time, if you look at the advertisements in the newspapers of the day, you could never have imagined anything like that. The same thing happened when she did the advertisement for Jean Lanvin. She managed to construct a completely imaginary image because she used a single ball of perfume and, with a mirror effect, she constructed a necklace. But it wasn't a necklace, it was a world of reflection around it. We can see a necklace, but we know that it isn't a necklace. So there's always this double or even more interpretations of these images which transport us to a completely different dimension of reality. But that she could make money from this kind of art is fascinating. I think that she was able to make money from this kind of art by selling it to advertisers and magazines so that they would understand how powerful art is for the public. These are always photos that, at first glance, seem quite simple to us. But there's always a play of reflection that we cannot even understand at first.
Parfois, il y a toujours un jeu de réflexion qu'on ne peut même pas comprendre.
It's very interesting, this connection between art, contemporary art research, and advertising. It's very American. It's an approach that Bauhaus and American art are very linked. So the milieu, the cultural milieu I was speaking. For example, in Italy, there is also a very often a great distance between the art and the advertising, the art and the television. In this work, there is this modernity also.
Il y a pris un changement assez significatif.
There was a significant change in the mid-1930s and perhaps a few years later. She then took all her photos in her studio and she started paying particular attention to daylight. All her photographs were taken with artificial light, and her abstract compositions were all done with artificial light. At a certain point, she began to photograph outdoors, and even the portraits she took at the time were all done with natural light. This choice was also related to her return to painting outdoors. In other words, she no longer created abstract compositions as she had done when she left the Bauhaus in 1927, but began to work outdoors again. And of course, with a fairly rich vocabulary from a formal point of view, there's all the experience, if you like, of cubism and abstraction, but she began to work, to paint in relation to nature and landscape. The colors are still the same as in her abstract compositions. That's quite interesting because she carried her colorist heritage with her from beginning to end. Even in the last collage she made, when she was between 70 and 80 years old, she used the same color palette. Of course, this was made in 1937, but there's still the issue of reflection in this portrait she made of herself and Pierre Minet or the model Vanvan. There are still all the problems of reflection, but there's also a great deal of attention paid to the landscape, both in Paris and in Brittany. So she took a whole series of photos where natural light is quite important. And it was there, even in the 1950s, that she continued to photograph significant cultural figures, the German naive painter more often than the classical dancer Rosella Itawa, and also collectors, always using natural light. The shift from using artificial to using natural light was, I think, a question of her freedom, which at a certain point led her to seek out another language and move in that direction. She wasn't afraid of change, which is important. The day before yesterday, Roberto and I were looking at the paintings she did between the 1950s and 1960s. They are even relevant to the experiences of totally contemporary artists, almost of today. And because there's a freedom to treat painting in a totally different way from what she had done with the more rigid, I think more formal, more thoughtful construction of the 1920s and so on. But she really managed to completely break down the surface with a freedom that no longer has a form. There's no longer anything that can be traced back to a true reality or a constructivist composition. And also, how to deal with this freedom of the brush here. That's it. That's the last thing she started doing again toward the end of her life. She wasn't painting anymore, but she started using collage again. And she also started creating patchwork during the war. There's a whole series of patchworks. You can definitely compare them to these paintings because the same language is expressed through another form of media. And so it's difficult to answer why she did it. She was that kind of woman, to find something that goes beyond what she had been doing up until that point. It's ultimately the freedom of an artist who never remained fixed in her artistic work. If we think, for example, of Sonia Delaunay, who is a tremendous artist, but if we look at her paintings from the 1910s and the 1960s, it's really the same approach. But it's magnificent. I don't mean to belittle her work. But she was always returning to the same problem, which was extraordinary, of course. And here, with Florence Henri, there are radical changes. And I think that's positive in a way, because it demonstrates the artist's freedom, the way of still searching for your own individual language, beyond all of the experiences in the past.
Ça démontre la liberté de l'artiste, la façon de chercher notre langage encore, au-delà de tout son expérience passée. Aussi sur le photomontage,
We can say that in photomontage, she also manages to reconstruct a reality with real elements, but totally invented. We can see this clearly in the photomontages of Rome. In this case, however, it is a photo composed in the studio with an old head and photomontaged onto the sea, in this case Formentera. And these photos of Rome are not photos, they are photomontages. Again, this is another interesting thing. She did a whole series on Rome, photomontages. And here again, there's another problem, because in this case, she used the photo that she used as a background and printed it in negative, because she photographed the model at night on her terrace, and then to achieve a nocturnal effect, she printed a photo taken during the day, but in negative, which makes it look as if photographed at night.
Et puis la photo montée sur la modèle était photographiée en nocturne.
So the use of black and white is really instrumental in her idea of creating a virtual reality. Let's just, you know, talk about one specific example. I have here a composition, 1931, and we have some tulips, some flowers. On the right side of the picture, we have like a narrow stripe and we see the bottom of the stems and the background here. Then we have a black zone and out of this blackness, the upper part of the flower with the flower themselves is really sort of floating in space. And the way she did it is that she put probably a sheet of paper in front of the lens, very close to the lens, so we cannot see it, but it creates a white and black environment, a space. And we know that this is a single flower that is actually going through, but it looks like a black hole, and we have no idea. So this is what I find so intriguing in her use of black and white, because not only the lens, not only the media, but the color, in this case it's black and white, play a huge role in that. And she was very creative in terms of post-production, even if Photoshop was far away. Let's talk about another picture. It's a self-portrait. So we are outdoors on a terrace, and we see Florence Henri's reflection in a frame. We are used to her reflections in a mirror, so we think she's probably holding a mirror. And then probably she just worked on the negative and she covered the negative with white paint so that we think it's a mirror. And it's not. This is reality, but it's masked by her intervention with paint. So I think that, again, black and white are a tool of creation. And I just love this use of anything virtual.
As you can see, Florence Henri quickly became a savvy artist with a very individual and ever-changing style in photography. And it's exactly that what attracted other women to come and study with her the medium.
Elle avait des élèves, d'une manière...
Florence Henri had pupils in a more informal way, that is to say, she had no school. But she had pupils who became extraordinary photographers, such as Giselle Freund. I think there was a certain rivalry between them because Giselle Freund didn't like to talk about Florence Henri very much. The other students were Lore Krüger, of course, Dorothy Weil, and also, of course, Lisette Model, who became very famous. Lisette Model, on the other hand, always wrote things of gratitude about Florence Henri. And there was Ilse Bing. Ilse Bing wrote at one point that she had left Germany to go to Paris, where Florence Henri was. That was in her memoirs. So you can see how important her role was at the time in the field of photography. And she did this in a domestic setting. She developed the photos with her students in the bathtub. And she did it in a way that was completely, how can I put it, non-academic. But she did, of course, manage to convey the principles of composition, the principles of how to use light, and so on. Lore Krüger also has portraits that are completely in the style of Florence Henri. Lisette Model too, some things at the beginning. Dorothy Weil did exactly the same composition with the mirrors in a slightly more shaky, slightly more tremulous way. But then she became a very well-known photographer in London in the 1950s. She was famous for photographing hairstyles and hats. She took some very beautiful photos. And each student of Florence Henri, of course, found her own way of expressing herself.
Après, évidemment, a trouvé sa direction d'expression. Pendant la guerre, oui, elle était à Paris.
During the war, yes, she was in Paris. But she wasn't considered a degenerate artist, no. Another interesting thing is that at one point she was the director of photography for the Negulescu film Boy on a Dolphin, starring Sophia Loren in 1956, if I remember correctly, which was shot on the Greek island of Hydra. There are photos she took on the set of Sophia Loren, and it was quite curious to see some shots from the film that are exactly the same as the compositions from the 1930s. I believe she had a bit of a falling out with the director afterwards, but anyway, those are details.
Mais bon, ça sont des détails.
We are talking about Florence Henri a circle 100 years after her beginning in photography. But our grammar, our language, seems like we are speaking of a contemporary, a very contemporary artist. So modernity is in the potentiality of the new media, something very similar to this our era, the beginning of photography, the beginning of this new perception of reality through the media is very similar to our situation in which we are exploring artificial intelligence, augmented reality. And so we are searching a new way to overcoming the reality. This is an important lesson Florence take from Bauhaus and Molinaghi, the productive use of photography or of media and not only reproduction. So this is a first step. Another important thing is the ability of Florence Henri knowing of the crossing around cultural milieu. In fact, is very deeply connected with the European and also American artists in this period. For example, in his first image, also in a painting, there is a great consciousness of the ancient art, mainly, I think, from Van Eyck to Velázquez. The problem of representation and overcoming the representation, mainly with the problem of the space in which the thing happens, but also very linked to the revolution by Cézanne and by the Cubist. So the new point of views inside the painting, inside the image. Very important is also the Industrial Revolution in the city, in the urban and the metropolitan landscape. So the use of industrial solution or artificial solution also to take a photograph, for example, reflection or new materials, new industrial surfaces are very important. We can also say 20, 30 years before pop art and before post-war artists. Very important also the abstraction studies from suprematism to constructivism in particular. And also the enigma of surrealism, the importance of casuality in the construction of the image professed by Breton or Man Ray or Italian metaphysica. Sometimes she works with, in some image we can say, she works in a superposition of ancient image, classical image from Greek or from Rome, but with collage and other manipulation of the picture. So often there is this approach in setting or changing the perspective and the perception of reality. Composition is one of the main works. Also, some titles from Florence Henry are named composition, new composition or real composition. So the construction of a new reality, also with the stratification or fragmentation of the reality of different layers. Also in the painting, also we have this sensation in which we are many perspective, asymmetry, geometric composition, and many layers. And this is the main things, the main research she obtained after with the photograph. So there is a great consciousness of history of art, history of image, but also the ability to translate that story in a new media and a new approach. Superposition, photomontage, composition, collage, and many other techniques she used. So we can say absolutely she knows the great potential of image, and also many, many years, many decades before us.
What Roberto said pretty much sums up Florence Henri's role in art history. What started as a playful experiment at the Bauhaus, inspired mainly by her friend Lucia Moholy, quickly became her main interest. And she mastered the medium like only a few others at the time. What Giovanni Battista Martini, Paola Rosina and Roberto La Carbonara made crystal clear in our interview was that Florence Henri never stuck to just one specific style, but found multiple ways of expressing her creativity in photography, photomontage and other media. When you look up Florence Henri's photos, you will find that diversity yourselves. It is extraordinary that she even found time to educate students who, all of them, became famous photographers as women in a time when men still heavily dominated the market. We are lucky that Giovanni Battista Martini and his gallery immediately understood how special her art is and that he didn't give up until he found her in a house in Belleval. Otherwise, who knows where her work would be today? I would like to thank my interview partners, Giovanni, Paola, Roberto. Thank you so much for meeting me in Bern last May and talking to me in three languages to make it possible. And thank you so much, Fabian Egelhofer from Zentrum Paul Klee, to put us in touch and provide a room. By the way, Zentrum Paul Klee in Bern will show an exhibition in its Cosmos Klee rooms with selected works by Florence Henri. Giovanni and Roberto are curating the exhibition and will show pieces of art from the collection of the Galleria Martini e Ronchetti. It will open at the end of August 2026 and can be visited until January 2027. I'm definitely going. What about you? As always, I linked several sources about Florence Henri in the show notes of this episode. And I also put down links for already existing episodes of Bauhaus Faces about Lucia Moholy, Paul Klee and Joseph Anani Albers, whom we all mentioned in this episode. If you like this episode or any other episode of Bauhaus Faces, please don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or YouTube and recommend it to your friends, family or colleagues. And don't forget to subscribe to my podcast newsletter on bauhausfaces.com, which immediately pops up once you enter the page. This way, you can stay up to date about new episodes of Bauhaus Faces. And now, there's nothing left to say, but tune in next time for a new episode of Bauhaus Faces.